Amen. I know there are many music fans in this room. I myself am a music fan, and maybe you've heard of the name of Dave Grohl. Dave Grohl used to be the drummer for Nirvana, and he is now the frontman for the Foo Fighters, if anybody listens to the Foo Fighters. And Dave Grohl, I've been following him on social media for several years, and a few years ago, he was preparing for an upcoming tour, he and his band, and he posted this picture. Arthur, sorry if anybody's queasy by that. And he, with this caption, he said, "First practice for the new tour, get ready, Mexico." And I looked at that picture and I was like, man, that's amazing. Like, here's this guy, like, he's playing till his fingers bleed. Like, I don't know how many hours. I play guitar and that's never happened to me. I'm like, how many hours of practice must he have gone through for his guitar to look like that? And it hit me. I was like, that is what real leadership looks like. Leadership bleeds for the people that it serves. It sacrifices. You can take that off the screen in case people are losing it right now. Dave Grohl also, there's a story that made the rounds a couple years ago. He was in Sweden playing a concert in front of tens of thousands of people, and he goes to jump off the stage. You know, he's a performer. And when he jumped off the stage, he kind of landed weird on a ramp and shattered his leg. And like the medics are rushing around in the crowd's like, what's going on? And he just speaks into the microphone. He says, I think I just broke my leg. And they're like, yeah, you know, the crowd's going nuts. He's like, no. Like, I think I really just broke my leg. And they're like, boo, you know. And he says, but I've got one promise for you. I'm going to go to the medic tent. I'm going to get taped up and I'm going to come out and finish this show. And sure enough, with a shattered leg, he goes and gets taped up, gets a cast, walks out, sits in a chair and plays a 2-hour set for 30,000 people. That's leadership. That's leadership. That is when you're broken, when you're hurting, you still push through it and you lead the people that you are called to serve, even when it's painful. And today we are continuing our study in the letter of 1 Peter. And today Peter gets to a point where he's been talking about how this church or these churches all throughout the Roman Empire are facing suffering and they're facing persecution and tribulation. And he's talked about, you know, how to live in these difficult times. And today he addresses specifically church leaders and pastors. And he says, this is how you lead a congregation when it's going through turbulent times. This is how you are to lead God's people in this day. And what we find is that pastors, according to Peter, are called to demonstrate their leadership in the church, not by demanding their rights or leading by sovereign decree like many spiritual leaders do. Many of you, I know, I've had conversations with many of you. Many of you have seen pastors and spiritual leaders in your life who lead with their authority. And they abuse their authority and they lead as if saying, I'm the man of God, I'm the leader, and you should do as I say because I said so. Peter says that's not how leaders are to lead within the church. He says true spiritual leadership is sacrificing yourself for the sake of those that you're called to serve. And leadership, especially as a follower of Jesus, means that you give your blood for the people that you're called to serve. It's sacrificial love. And Peter writes in 1 Peter chapter 5, verse 1, he says, "So I exhort the elders." In the New Testament, the words, the authors use the word elder, pastor, and overseer as synonymously, and sometimes even bishop, as synonymous and interchangeable words. So elder is referring to the pastors in the churches of the diaspora all over the Roman Empire. Also, we need to know the word elder can be confusing to us because in our language we think old. Like, respect your elders. In this context, it didn't necessarily refer to age. It referred to spiritual maturity. And Peter is addressing these pastors of these churches. He's saying, I'm encouraging you, elders, pastors among you. He says, as a fellow elder, he says, I'm a pastor as well, and a witness of the sufferings of Christ, as well as a partaker in the glory that is going to be revealed. And he says, shepherd the flock of God that is among you, exercising oversight, not under compulsion, but willingly, as God would have you, not for shameful gain, but eagerly, not domineering over those in your charge, but by being an example to the flock. And when the chief shepherd, the ultimate shepherd, Jesus, appears, you will receive an unfading crown of glory. And then Peter says that, you know, that's how pastors are to act. And now he addresses the church. He says, likewise, those of you who are younger, he's referring to both people who are physically younger and spiritually younger, be subject to your pastors, to your elders. Clothe yourselves, all of you, pastors and people in the church included, with humility toward one another. For God opposes the proud, but gives grace to the humble. And what you see in this text is that in this particular time in history, the church needed godly pastors who could speak truth into God's people's lives in these turbulent times. And the people of God, what they needed to know is they needed to know how to trust and submit and honor their spiritual leadership so that they could survive in the struggle of persecution that they were facing. And I know already some of you are like, a sermon on the role of the pastor? And you're like, that, geez, that doesn't apply to me. Like, somebody needs to preach that to me, you know? I'm like, yes, I'm preaching to myself. And you're like, well, that doesn't apply to me, though. Like, what is the role of a pastor? But it certainly does apply to you. Because many of you have seen what really poor spiritual leadership looks like. And I know many of you have considered giving up on the church because of you've seen pastors who abuse their authority. And the scriptures say, don't give up on the church just because there are a few bad apples, but rather seek and find godly leadership that can lead you and that you can trust and that you can honor as you are following Jesus. And they are called to help you and empower you as you seek to do that. And I think that today, many people just, I think there's just a big misunderstanding of what a pastor is in this society. And some people, they view pastors and elders and ministry leaders as like an expendable add-on to their life. A lot of people think, they're like, you know, I need a pastor in my life because it's like somebody on call who can sprinkle a little Jesus onto my life. You can give me some devotional thoughts on Sunday mornings. But, you know, I don't really need a spiritual leader to like guide me in any meaningful way. You know, so people just kind of often view spiritual leadership as just something that, you know, it's something to just take when they need it and leave it when they don't need it. That's not a healthy way to view spiritual leadership. But other people put pastors and spiritual leadership on this crazy and just unheard of pedestal. And they think, well, you know, the pastor is like, and they often, sometimes pastors, as spiritual leaders are treated like celebrities, like they're untouchable. And we're placed on this pedestal and we're expected to be perfect. And it's just, it's treated as something other, as if our prayers are more powerful than yours. And people often approach me because they think they can get closer to God by getting close to me. And the scriptures say that you don't need a mediator. Christ is your mediator. You don't need me to draw you into the presence of God. You have Jesus to do that. And so people often view pastors and spiritual leaders in this really unhealthy way by putting us up on a pedestal. And other times, many of us are just suspicious of any leadership, especially spiritual leadership, because we've all seen some really crummy pastors and leaders abuse the authority that's been given to them by the church. We've seen pastors that act more like CEOs than they do shepherds. We've seen pastors that don't allow people to question them. We've seen pastors with massive egos who care more about their book deals and their radio ministry than they do about the actual people in their congregation. We've seen pastors that lead by force and not humility. And we keep seeing pastors end up in the news, committing adultery, stealing money, buying commercial jets with church members' tithes. It's insane. And we see this, me included. I'm like, I just want to give up on this whole idea of church because there's such all these scumbags that are taking advantage of the church. And Peter is going to say, look, of course there are going to be pastors that abuse their authority. Just as there are husbands and wives and employers and politicians that abuse their influence. But just like we don't give up on the idea of family or government or work, we ought not give up on the idea of spiritual leadership altogether just because we've tasted a few bad apples. But rather, we should seek out godly leaders that we can trust and submit to those leaders as they're striving to lead us to be more like Jesus. And in the text this morning, Peter is going to tell us what we ought to expect from pastors and how we are to treat our pastors and our spiritual leaders, our elders, ministry leaders. And in many ways, I see this sermon, you might be thinking like, what kind of ego does this dude have to stand up and tell us like what pastors are supposed to be like? I see this as me explaining to you the standard that the scriptures have set that of which you are to hold me accountable. And Kyle accountable, and all of our other leaders accountable. And you ought to hold us accountable to humility and integrity and maturity. And when we fail to live up to this standard, you fire us. Or you ask me to resign. Like, and so as we work through this text, I don't want you to hear me saying, like, this is me. I mean, I'm working on this. But this is the standard of which you are to seek out when you're, if you're a guest here and you're looking for a church, when you're, the number one thing you look for in a church is not how good the sermons are and how good the music is. What you ought to be looking for is godly leadership. That's what you ought to be looking for. And so what I want to do today is highlight and walk through this text, highlight what a pastor is, talk about how we are to honor our pastors, and then we have something special at the end of our service, and it's why I'm dressed up. It's why Kyle's dressed up. We're going to be affirming and ordaining Kyle as an official pastor of our church today, his ordination. So it's exciting. The first thing I want us to see in this passage is the call of a pastor. Peter says, I exhort the elders among you as a fellow elder and a witness of the sufferings of Christ, as well as a partaker in the glory that is going to be revealed. Peter says that in order to be a faithful pastor, a faithful leader, one must have a personal and thriving relationship with God. That seems self-explanatory, right? If somebody's going to lead the people of God, they ought to have a relationship with God. Peter says, I was a witness to the sufferings of Jesus. Peter says, I was there when he was arrested. I was there when he was crucified. I was there when he taught the Sermon on the Mount. I was there when he fed the 5,000. I was there in the private moments with him when we prayed together. And he taught me. And he says, and I'm a partaker in the glory of Jesus. I've experienced the glory of Jesus in my life. There's this amazing text in Acts chapter 4 where Peter is preaching the gospel in the Sanhedrin, which is like the ruling council of the day, is like, you know, dude, you need to stop preaching the gospel or else we're going to kill you. And Peter comes before the court and they're like, you need to stop preaching the gospel. And he's like, yeah, I'm not going to do that. I'm going to keep preaching the gospel. And they're like, but we'll kill you. He's like, I don't care. I'm going to keep preaching. And this is what it says that the people, the rulers of the council, what they saw. It says, when they saw the boldness of Peter and John, they perceived that they were uneducated, common men. But they were astonished because they recognized that these men had been with Jesus. Man, like, that's what, don't you want that to be said about your life? When people meet you and they're like, that is somebody who's been with Jesus. That's the call of a pastor, Kyle. When we minister to people, we ought to first be with Jesus so that we can lead others to Jesus. Our calling before anything else is to be with God. I can't stand up here and offer you a word from God if I haven't listened to him myself. See, it would be impossible for me to lead a congregation to a place I've never been before. So the calling of a pastor and anybody in this church who exercises any spiritual leadership, be with God so that you can lead others to him. Gardner C. Taylor, the greatest preacher in American history, used to pastor in Bed-Stuy at Concord Baptist Church. He said once to a group of pastors, he said, you must fill your soul in order to empty it. That's the call of a pastor. What's the task of a pastor? What's the job of a pastor? Verse 2 says, shepherd the flock of God that is among you. Shepherd. Be a shepherd. Peter uses this beautiful metaphor of what it means to be a spiritual leader in the life of a church. And it's the same metaphor that Jesus used with him after the resurrection. Be a shepherd. Feed the flock of God. So what does a shepherd do? I broke it down into three things. First thing a shepherd does, a shepherd is called to care for their flock. Jesus, who Peter calls the chief shepherd, the ultimate shepherd, in John chapter 10, said, my sheep know my voice, and I know them, and they follow me. See, a shepherd can only care for its flock if it actually knows the names of its flock and is with its flock. In order to shepherd the flock of God, you must know the people of God. My father-in-law is a pastor, and he's been a pastor for decades, and he leads like a very, very, very large church, like several thousand people. But before the service, he's always talking to guests. He's out on the front steps. He's like helping people to their seats. He's always having conversations with people before the service happens and saying hello to people. He visits people in their homes after they, like, I mean, when they're sick. He goes to the hospital. He invites people into his home. This is a guy who leads a church of several thousand people. And one time a guest came to the church and they were shocked that the senior pastor was like out before the service saying hello to people and talking to everyone before the service. And he was like, really? Is that weird? And they said, yeah, we went to a church before for a long, long time where the pastor would hang out backstage before the service and would come out and preach and then go backstage after he was finished. And then when they found out that my father-in-law, like a pastor, was actually involved in regular people's lives, it blew their mind. And I'm like, why would that blow your mind? That's what a pastor does. And first of all, there should never be a backstage in God's house. This is not a performance. It's a family. But secondly, how dare any pastor think that he is more important or too busy to be with his people? Shame on that kind of pastor. My wife has this thing that she says to me when I come home. I'm not immune to not wanting to be around people sometimes, you know. But there are some days where I come home and I'm complaining. I'm like, somebody interrupted my day. I was trying to write my sermon. I was trying to update the website. I was trying to do all this stuff. And somebody came in and they wanted to talk about their problems. And I'm like, they interrupted me. I was doing all this work. And my wife always gently and humbly and graciously reminds me. She says, Will, people are the ministry. People are the ministry, not your sermon, not the website, keeping up the website, not dealing with all the administrative stuff. People are the ministry. People are what you're called to. So she calls me out often and she's like, how dare you think that they interrupted you? They are the ministry. And shepherds, in order to be a good shepherd, must spend time with their sheep, know them, love them, care for them. Second thing a shepherd does is feeds their flock. This is what Jesus told Peter to do. Peter, do you love me? Yes, Lord, you know I love you. Then feed my sheep. Well, what does that mean? What does it mean? Feed? What am I feeding you? Like, I can't afford to feed you every week. Like, I'm not even a good cook. Feed you the gospel is what Jesus means. The message of Jesus, the scriptures. This is the job of a spiritual leader. Not to feed you my opinions, not to feed you, not to entertain you, but to feed you the words of God. To feed you the scriptures, to give you the gospel. This is why at our church we preach through the Bible. We don't do a lot of preaching on like cultural topics of the day. We just preach verse by verse through the Bible. Because as a pastor, my job is to feed this church with a healthy diet of God's word. And if I just did a bunch of like sermon series on my opinions, one, that wouldn't be a sermon. That would be just me talking. But two, that would be like junk food. You wouldn't grow in your faith if all you heard was just my opinions on the world. That can't help you grow strong. Only God's word, faithfully taught, can strengthen us and nourish us. That's why we teach through the Bible. That's why we're working verse by verse through 1 Peter. See, it's the job of a shepherd to feed the flock a healthy diet. And then the third thing, and this may come as a surprise to some of you, some of the things I'm about to say, but a shepherd's job is also to protect the flock. In Matthew chapter 10, Jesus warns his disciples that there will always be in God's church wolves in sheep's clothing. That means that in the life of a church, there will often be people who come into the church. They look like sheep. They look trustworthy. They look well-intentioned, but they're coming into the church and their main goal is to cause division and cause trouble. And Jesus told his disciples, he said, you are to love the sheep, but you're to fight the wolves. This is why Jesus said, be as wise as a serpent, meaning you got to be street smart. You got to know what people are doing when they come into the church. But he said, be as harmless as a dove, meaning you got to love people well. So pastors need to be street smart. They need to know how to watch out for those who come into a church trying to cause problems. And many of you have probably seen this. People that come into church environments and they just try to sow these seeds of discord and disunity. When I was a pastor in Alabama, we had a college student who was visiting all of our college Bible study groups all over our church. And he was teaching what I would call a false gospel. He was saying that it wasn't Christ alone that saves you. You had to live this kind of life and you had to do these certain things. And he was claiming this ability to heal people of sickness. And he was claiming the ability to heal people of disabilities and all sorts of things like that. And he was going into these groups and he was slandering me. And he was saying, you know, this guy doesn't know what he's talking about. And I'm like, yeah, because you're 19, you know. But he was slandering me in all these various ways. Well, one week he came to our large college worship service. And that night I preached on suffering like I did last week. And it was right around that time that my son, many of you know my son has cerebral palsy. It was right at that time that my son was diagnosed with cerebral palsy. So the sermon I preached that night was pretty emotional because like we had just found out my son's disability. And we didn't know at that time if he would ever walk, if he would ever talk, any of that stuff. And so it was a very like one of those like heart on my sleeve kind of messages. And after the service, this kid comes up to me and he puts his hand on my shoulder and he says, "I prophesy in the name of the Lord that your son is now healed." And I looked at that kid square in the face and I said, "Young man," I said, "I believe that God can heal my son. So maybe you're telling the truth. And so I'm going to give you the benefit of the doubt and I'm not going to write you off as a false teacher just yet." I said, "But here's what I want you to know, son. If I wake up tomorrow morning and my son still has cerebral palsy, you're no longer welcome to come to any event at this church." And he was like, "Well, that's mean. How can you do that?" I said, "Son, I said in the Old Testament, when prophets prophesied about things and they didn't come to pass, they stoned them. You're not going to come into this congregation feeding this stuff to our people. You're not going to tell people that their disabled child is healed when their child is not healed. Do you realize the emotional, devastating effect that can have on people? I told him, I said, "If I wake up in the morning," and you can call me and ask me, but I said, "But I think you know what's going to happen. I said, when I wake up in the morning, my son isn't walking and talking, you're not welcome here anymore." And you say, "Well, that's harsh." Well, I think about Paul in the Galatian church. You had people coming into the Galatian church saying, "No, no, no, it's not Jesus that saves you. You've got to be saved and the men need to be circumcised." And I'm not trying to use like harsh language just to like get a rise out of you guys. You know what Paul said to them? He said, "If that's the gospel you're preaching, why don't the men just go ahead and cut it all the way off?" See, Paul used harsh language and he called those heretics out for what they were. He said, "They're heretics. And don't believe them. Don't be with them because they're preaching a gospel that's leading you away from Jesus." Not too long ago, I got a few emails from a lot of, all the pastors in New York, or a lot of the pastors, we all know each other and we're friends. And not too long ago, I got a few emails from my pastor friends here in the city, and they were warning me of a 50-year-old man who was in New York. He had been visiting their churches, and he was coming into their churches. He was going to their small group Bible studies, and he was praying on the women. And when he would be, he was saying inappropriate things, you know, trying inappropriate things. And when he would be approached about it, he had a blog, of course. You know, he had a blog and he would slander these churches online. And here's my thing, like, dude, if 250 churches have told you to stop coming to your church, the common denominator is you, man. Like, you're the problem. But he had done this in 10 to 15 churches across Brooklyn and Manhattan. And this is a guy who had been excommunicated from 250 churches across Sweden, Australia, England, Canada, and the U.S. And Sweden as a nation had excommunicated this guy. So I have this man's name and his mugshot emblazoned in my memory. He's in New York right now visiting churches, pulling this stuff. And if I ever see this man's name on a connection card, he will have to have a one-on-one meeting with me before he's allowed to come to this church. Why? I'm not trying to posture myself as some tough guy today. Like, I'm definitely not. Like, I'm a coward in these. I'm like shaking even thinking about the possibility of that. But that comes with the job. A pastor is called to protect the integrity of the church. And my job is to protect this church from people who want to tear it down. That's the job of a shepherd, to protect the sheep from dangerous wolves. It's the call of a shepherd. Those are the tasks of a shepherd. What's the example of a pastor? It says that pastors ought to exercise oversight, not under compulsion, but willingly, as God would have you, not for shameful gain, but eagerly, not domineering over those in your charge, but you're an example to the flock. Jay-Z, in his new album, 444, which I haven't got to hear because I already wasted my free Tidal subscription on the Kanye album months before. Jay-Z has a lyric to a song, Legacy, in his new album, and it goes like this. It's a biographical song about his childhood. He says, "You see, my father was the son of a preacher man whose daughter couldn't escape the reach of the preacher's hand. The charge of energy set all the Carters back. It took all these years to get to zero. In fact, I hated religion because here was this Christian who was preaching on Sundays versus how he was living Monday. Someday I might forgive him." And I hear that and it breaks my heart because I know so many people who have lost their faith because of hypocritical pastors. Hypocritical spiritual leaders who you thought you could trust, but they end up abusing you. You thought they say one thing from behind a podium, but then they live another thing Monday through Friday. And I've experienced this as well. I mean, I've got stories of pastors in my life that seemed more concerned with their egos than they did with my soul. And I've had many pastors that have cast me aside because of my sin and thought I was worthless and beyond repair. But also by God's grace, I've had some amazing spiritual leaders in my life who not only taught me the gospel, but they demonstrated it with their lives as well. And they didn't give up on me when I stumbled and fell. But they stuck with me through those times and they saw me come to maturity. And that made all the difference in my life. Basil of Caesarea, who was a 4th century Turkish pastor, it used to be said of him, people used to say of him, they said his words were like thunder because his life was like lightning. I love that. Gardner Taylor, once again, the greatest American preacher in my opinion. Somebody once said of him, or his biographer once said of him, he was a great pastor because he was a good man. Kyle, I sure hope that that can be said about us one day. That we're great pastors because we're good men. And I know there are many pastors out there that want to lead by force and not by example, and they believe that because they have a title, that they're entitled. And I want you to beware of pastors who provoke their people and beware of pastors who are so insecure with themselves that they act like dictators of the people around them rather than shepherds. I read a story this week of a tour guide who was showing a group of tourists around the countryside outside of Jerusalem. And there were like, you know, there's shepherds all over the countryside. And he would point out the shepherds and he would say, you know, a shepherd always leads from the front by example. A shepherd never drives his sheep from behind. And as the bus, you know, they went out into the city, and as they were coming back out of the city, one of the tourists pointed out that he saw a flock of sheep, and there was somebody behind him chasing him with a stick. And he was shouting at him and screaming at him. And the tourist said, hey, to the tour guide, I thought you said that a shepherd would never do that. He said, stop the bus. And so the driver stops the bus. He says, I want to figure this out. What's going on with this crazy shepherd? Tour guide goes off the bus, starts talking to the man, comes back, he gets on the bus with a big smile on his face, and he says, that wasn't the shepherd, that was the butcher. You see, shepherds are to lead by example, not by force. And when shepherds lead by force, they're more like butchers than they are shepherds. They will destroy, they'll steal from you your spiritual vitality rather than give life into your spiritual life. Pete Scazzaro, who's a pastor here in Queens, says if a preacher lives up to his own preaching, he's probably preaching too low. And I say that quote because I know that today I'm preaching way over my head. I don't live up to this perfectly. But I do hope that for those of you who know me, you can see at least that I, and Kyle as well, that we are striving, and all the leaders in our church, our elders, our ministry team leaders, you can see that we are striving to follow after Jesus in a way that is an example to this church. And listen, I'm going to fail to be perfect, as I always do. I mean, I quoted Kanye and Jay-Z just now. Like, I've already failed in many ways to be an example. But if I ever fail to be an example of someone who is striving to know and obey Jesus, I should resign or I should be fired. That's what the example of a pastor. Now, I want you guys to see what it looks like to honor spiritual leadership. Peter says, likewise, those of you who are younger, once again referring to both age and spiritual maturity, he says, be subject to your pastors. Honor them, submit to them, clothe yourselves, all of you, pastors included, with humility toward one another, for God opposes the proud, but gives grace to the humble. Peter tells these Christians, trust your pastors and be subject to their leadership. One time when I was a very, very young pastor, I was teaching a membership class. I was an associate pastor, and my senior pastor, he was like, you know, teach the membership class. And I was like, all right, perfect. You know, give me an opportunity to show that I'm worthy. And I get up there, I'm teaching this membership class, and there's a woman who's like, I mean, right front and center, like right where you're at, Joe. She's looking at me right in the eyes. And as I'm talking about what it looks like to submit to spiritual leadership, she's going. And I, like, when I say I'm a young pastor, like I had just started and I was like shaking, like it rattled me. I don't even think I got through the rest of the thing. I was like, what? You remember that, don't you, Rebecca? Yeah. I came home, like, I was like, should I quit? Like, what? Should I like go do something else? Like be a track coach or something? Like, we have an aversion to leadership. We have an aversion to submission. That's an American problem. And we covered this over the last few weeks, but Peter says you need spiritual leaders in your life that you can entrust your life to. And here's the thing. If the spiritual leader that's over you, you can't trust them, go find another church. Like, I'm giving you permission. If you don't trust me, go find another church. And this isn't something, I'm not up here saying, like, you guys have to submit. I have a pastor as well that I submit. His name's Derek Staples, and he used to be my boss. There's not a major spiritual decision in my life or even a decision in this church that I don't first run by my pastor. He's a pastor down in Alabama. I call him all the time. He prays for me. He cares for me. He loves me. He sends me gifts and sometimes even a check and says, like, take your wife out for a date or what. Like, he cares for me. And why am I willing to entrust my spiritual life to this guy? Well, I'll tell you one reason. Because this is a pastor, when I was serving under him, we had a woman in our church who needed a kidney transplant. He just quietly goes to the doctor, gets his blood tested, and realizes he's a match, gives his kidney to a church member. Like, I'll submit to that guy. Like, I trust a guy, who's willing to give an organ to a church member. I'll go, you know what? I'll submit to you. Teach me how to pray. Teach me how to be generous. And I'll do whatever you tell me to do because I want to be like you as you're trying to be like Jesus. That doesn't mean, when I submit to it, it doesn't mean he controls me. But it means I willingly place myself under his care. And when I need spiritual advice, I go to him. And I listen to him and I do what he says. That's what submission is. And listen, I can't be that for everybody. And Kyle can't be that for everybody. But here is my advice to you. This is one of the best pieces of advice you can have as a follower of Jesus. Find somebody who's more mature than you in the faith. Somebody that you look at and you go, in 5 years, I would like to have their kind of faith. And then just pester them. And say, like, I want you to take me out to lunch. I'll buy your coffee. You teach me how you read the Bible. You teach me how to have a quiet time. You teach me to pray. And just say, teach me how to follow Jesus like you follow Jesus. Everybody needs spiritual leadership in their life, a mentor that they can just trust themselves to. Hebrews 13, 17 says, obey your leaders and submit to them because they're keeping watch over your souls as those who will have to give an account. Let them do this with joy and not with groaning, for that would be of no advantage to you. And here's the reality. I know that most of you have much harder jobs than I have. It's true. Like, my job is not that hard. Kyle, our job's not that hard. It's a pretty sweet job. I get to study and teach the Bible and hang out with amazing people all day. That's my job. My wife, like, sometimes when, you know, she stays at home, she's a social worker, and she's like dying sometimes. She's like, work is so hard. And she's like, sometimes she doesn't say it, but I can see that she's like jealous of me. Like, sometimes she's like, you know, maybe all you do is like just drink coffee with people. And I'm like, that's not what I do. I have a hard job. But then when I think about it, I'm like, no, really, I just have coffee with people. It's awesome. I study the Bible. It's incredible. I love my job. But while being a pastor is not necessarily as laborious as other jobs, you gotta understand it's spiritually and emotionally very, very heavy. I mean, I never stop thinking about the church. When one of you hurts, like I hurt, like Becca knows, I have sleepless nights when I think of those of you who are hurting. It never leaves my mind. And it never leaves my mind that I'm going to be accountable to God for this church. Like, I'm going to be accountable to God for this church. The author of Hebrews says that is a heavy burden that spiritual leaders choose to carry. And so one thing that Christians can do to honor their leaders and to help lighten their load is to encourage their spiritual leaders. Today, when you go pick up your kids from Crossroads Kids, encourage the teachers that are teaching your kids. Because they're giving up their time to come and hear the word and sing with God's people so that they can serve your kids. You guys have no idea what a handwritten letter from a church member saying you're praying for me means to my soul. You know, I save every one of those letters. You know, Barry Flynn in here, I don't know if you guys know him, but he sends me an encouraging email just about every week. Just saying, he's not flattering me. He'll tell me, like, he like critiques my sermon every week. He's like, that, you know, I wouldn't have said it that way or whatever. Like, but I like that. But it's always couched with love. It's always, he's an encourager. I get an email every week saying, wow, Will, that sermon touched my heart in this way. I save every one of those emails because we need to be encouraged. Pastors are human beings. I think sometimes you guys think we're actually more holy than we are. You know what I mean? Like, I think you think, like, man, we've achieved some spiritual status where, like, all our doubts are removed and we don't have insecurities. But, like, that's just not true. Like, I still have doubts and I still have insecurities, probably more than anybody. I still have fears just like everybody else. And so maybe it's self-serving. Maybe it's selfish of me today. But encourage me sometimes. If I or Kyle or your kids' teachers or, you know, your James or anybody who has any leadership in this church has ministered to you in any way and made any impact with you, your life, share it with us. Listen, it is going to give us a big head for a minute, okay? Like, I know you're afraid of that. You're like, I don't want to send the pastor a note. He'll get a big head and get cocky. Yes, of course it will. But that'll only be for a short time because the insecurities always creep back in. And on those days when our insecurities and our fears overtake us, those encouraging words are the things that help keep us from wanting to give up. See, if a pastor is at all, if a spiritual leader is at all worthy of honor, show them honor. I call my pastor all the time and just say, man, I love you. And I used to, when I worked for him, I thought I knew more than him. When I was an associate pastor, Kyle, I was like, man, the senior pastor doesn't know what he's doing. I could do this better than him. I could do his job better than he can. And then when I became like the senior pastor with that like responsibility, I texted him. I was like, dude, please forgive me for all the times I thought I knew everything better than you. He was like, yeah, I knew that day would come, man. I love you, you know. But like I encourage him because of what he means to my life. And so today I said we're going to be ordaining Kyle. And I want to end this message today by addressing you, Kyle. We as a church, several months ago, we hired you as an employee because we believe that you were qualified to fill a job description. But today, with the affirmation of our elders, we are affirming you as a pastor because we believe that in your ability and in your integrity and in your humility to lead us as one of our pastors. And over the months working with you, hanging out with you, I've noticed a genuine faith in Jesus in your life. And I see in your life a thriving relationship with God. I've watched as you've led your family with integrity over the last few months. And I listened to the way Colette speaks about you. And I've heard you pray as you celebrate the way God is changing lives at Crossroads. But this morning, I want to remind you of what you're called to do. Your title here is Associate Pastor of Discipleship and Ministries. But your calling is to lead this church to see the beauty and the glory of Jesus. And the only way you can lead us to see Jesus is that you must strive to be like him first. Kyle, when you first moved here, I took you to grab lunch with me with one of my mentors, Edwin Colon, a pastor here in Brooklyn. And you asked Pastor Edwin, I told you, I said, just ask him everything. Like, he knows everything about pastoring in New York. And you asked him, you said, what do I need to know about being a pastor in Brooklyn? And Pastor Edwin looked at you and said, it was cool. He said, Kyle, the calling to be a pastor in New York is a calling to suffer for the sake of God's people. And Kyle, to be a pastor means that you will walk through pain with people in this room. You'll enter into their pain. That's what it means to be a pastor. You'll cry with them, you'll pray with them, you'll celebrate with them. You'll sacrifice your time, your own money, your energy, and sometimes even your own blood to make sure that the people of this church feel loved, protected, and cared for, and fed. And there will be days where you have to fight wolves. And you'll come to realize that Satan himself hates what you're doing. And he'll attack you in a number of ways, and he'll attack your family in a number of ways. And you'll face discouragement, and you'll face insecurity, and you'll face fear. And there will be times when, like Dave Grohl, you'll have to bleed for this congregation. But you will lead in those moments, not in your own strength, but in the strength of Jesus, who shed all of his blood for us on the cross. It's Jesus who is your example. He leads not by force. He doesn't force us to do what he says, but rather he lays himself down for us so that we can know him. He gave up his life so that we can find ours. And so let Jesus be your example and your strength as you lay down your life for the people of Crossroads. And if you do this, Kyle, if you live out your calling, you will get to rejoice with all of these people when they rejoice. And you'll get to pray with all of these people when they become followers of Jesus. You'll baptize many people. And you're going to have a front row seat to all that God is doing here at Crossroads here in Brooklyn. And it's an incredible calling that we have as pastors. And I and our elders affirm that we believe in God's hand on your life, and we invite you to lead us into God's presence as one of our pastors.